Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Jamie Dunlop to the podcast. Jamie serves as an associate pastor of Capitol Hill Baptist Church in Washington, D.C. He's also the author of a recently released book titled Budgeting for a Healthy Church, Aligning Finances with Biblical Priorities for Ministry. Jamie, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. And as I said to you before we got on the recording, you know, we talk about preaching and preachers here, and oftentimes matters not only pertaining to the pulpit ministry, but beyond the pulpit ministry to matters pertaining to the local church more broadly. And your book and this topic is one such matter. And so I'm looking forward to talking with you and a conversation I know will be helpful to many who find themselves in local church ministry and wrestling with how to handle the practicalities of the local church, including matters of budget and finance. So, hey, before we get into that, how about a word of update on you and your current ministry there at Capitol Hill and what's new in your life and ministry?
Sure. So I serve as one of the associate pastors at Capitol Hill Baptist Church in Washington, D.C. I've been doing that for about 10 years, actually 10 years as of last week. Prior to that, I served as a member of the church while working a career in business, eventually serving as one of the non-staff elders for a further 10 years. So I've been here for about 20 years. And always hard to give people an update on the life of a local church unless it's really unusual. It's almost like giving a life of updating the life of a farm. You continue to sow the seed, and by God's grace, you see good things happening, and trust that when we get to glory, we'll see a lot more than we saw here. But things are going well, and they seem just to continue in a good path.
And you guys are in the middle of a building project, is that right?
That is true. Yes. Yes. We have a pastoral internship program here, and Washington, D.C., particularly downtown D.C., is an expensive place to house those brothers who come. So we have some extra land, and we're trying to put up some housing to better train pastors for the future.
Good for you. Well, listen, let's talk about your book, Budgeting for a Healthy Church. And again, this is one of those matters that is so practical, and so many pastors most naturally engage the pulpit ministry, pastoral care issues, leading a church staff. But when it comes to the budget, for many of them, it's like reading Greek, no pun intended. It's a different language for them. And so I guess first, what brought this book about? Tell me your own story and what prompted you to write such a book.
Yeah, well, first, I want to commend you for thinking about the book, given the audience of the podcast. I actually wrote the book primarily thinking about preachers. Because I think it's preachers who tend to underestimate how critical thinking about the budget is to the work they're trying to do, obviously not just to preach good sermons, but to see healthy churches raised up. Motivation for writing the book came from watching a lot of churches try to get healthier. And many times what I see is a pastor or a group of elders or lay people who are trying to get a church to go in a healthy direction, they have some great ideas. What they don't realize is that the budget is kind of pushing in a different direction. And I think that we very often think of the spiritual health of the church is somewhat unrelated to the budget. And I actually think they're quite intimately related. And so if we want to have a healthier church, we have to have a healthier church budget. So I think often books are born out of frustration. This book was born out of the frustration of just watching people struggle, not understanding the connection that was there.
And so make this a touch more personal for us. Your story, Capitol Baptist Church. I guess, you know, many of our listeners have an interest in the ministry of Mark Dever, an interest in Capitol Hill Baptist Church, given all that you guys do. Again, we're not looking for state secrets here, but any sense of the story there and how you guys have had to think through this, work through this, would that give us some texture perhaps to the book and a texture perhaps to why this is a need?
Yeah, it would. So, we're a church who have been around here since I guess we've been meeting here since 1867, became a church in 1878. The church certainly has some history, became quite large, at least by the standards of the time through the 1950s, and went through several decades of decline through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s, and really began to kind of regrow in the late 90s. The church at that time was struggling financially. We were a fairly aged congregation. And so in some ways, it felt like restarting from scratch. And certainly, as we began to try to move the church toward a more congregational model of ministry, emphasizing the priesthood of every believer, emphasizing our responsibility to disciple each other, to help each other grow, and really to push ministry back into the congregation, there were some changes to the budget that happened as a result. There were changes in terms of the type of staffing positions that we began to fund. There were changes in how we tried to use ministry dollars. So instead of thinking about funding programs to attract people to the church or funding programs as the main way people get involved in the church, we began to take a lighter touch in terms of what we funded and be more careful in terms of what we funded. And it changes how we thought about dollars going toward Great Commission causes, trying to think more about how we can deploy those dollars toward building healthy churches, which is what we were trying to do here, rather than simply thinking about missions more broadly, evangelism more broadly. So I watched that the first 10 years I was here as a layperson, and then I've been involved in that the last 10 years.
So what is the main argument of your book?
It's that a budget is a spiritual document. Because a budget categorizes what a church values, and what a church values is spiritual in nature, we should not have a strong dichotomy between financial and spiritual. Jesus talked about money so much because, as he said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. That's true of an individual. That's who Jesus was talking to. I think it's also very true of a congregation. And so the burden of the book is to help a pastor understand how much of the philosophy of ministry of their church is embedded in the church budget. In that sense, it's not a book about how to put together a church budget. It's the much more thorny topic of what should be in your church budget. And in particular, what the wisdom of Scripture has for what should and should not be in the church's budget and what impact that's going to have and what ministry really looks like. So I would say if you really want to know a church's philosophy of ministry, don't read their website, don't talk to their pastor, look at their budget, and you will get a much better sense of how ministry is going to operate in that church.
You know, when people ask me about my job at Midwestern Seminary, I say, look, the work of a president really in the final analysis comes down to two words, mission and money. The first word, mission, making sure the institution is going where it is to be going. That's a convictional statement, a confessional statement, a vision statement. It impacts who you hire, what you do, the type of events you undertake, the degrees you offer, et cetera. So really, the work, you roll it up in one word, is mission. But supporting that work is the word money. And most people, when they hear that, they think of fundraising, and that's a component of it. But it's much more than that. It's enrollment management in such a way that you have a sufficient enrollment to pay your bills. But more importantly, it's on the other side of it. It's actually stewarding well and rightly the money the Lord entrusts to you. I mean, you can have all the money in China, but if you don't steward it rightly, then it still won't be enough. When I look at nonprofits, and with that argument in mind, when I look at nonprofits and think about churches and ministries, it seems to me most of them get themselves in financial trouble in two ways on the stewardship side. One is by building facilities they really don't need, and thus you have not only the construction costs, but the maintenance costs, the custodial care costs, the heating and cooling costs, the long-term capital needs costs associated with it, and so forth. And then oftentimes when you have that building, then good grief, you got a building, you got to have people in it, right? It doesn't make sense to build a building and leave it half full. So you find yourself hiring for space, which is a very unwise way to look at it. The other way is building buildings you don't need or hiring people that you don't need. And their personnel budget gets bloated and bloated and bloated. And before you know it, everything is razor thin. They are in a never-ending state of crisis fundraising. They're eking out year-end gifts to make it work. And that's when the economy's perfect and the unemployment's at 3.8% and the stock market's at an all-time high and the business cycle is good. And then you get a little glitch, a little setback, a little economic pullback, perhaps even recession, and massive layoffs come and hand-wringing and all this major ministerial disruption. And every time I see that, it just makes me say, why did you let yourself get into that situation in the first place? So I guess for you to take my little monologue there and bring it to your book and to what you're seeing, what are common budgetary traps that you're seeing churches fall into from your vantage point?
Well, let me give you maybe a broader categorical trap, which both of the ones you just talked about fall into, which is we end up getting backed into a corner where we talk about our church. We talk to our church about giving, not as Paul did say in Philippians 4:17, because we are eager for their good, but because we have some other organizational priority in mind. And so whether that is they need to give so we don't have to lay off our staff, or they need to give because if they stop giving, we can't fund these programs, which is how we're supposed to grow as a church, and the whole thing collapses like a house of cards. Or they need to give, otherwise we're not going to pay the mortgage for this beautiful facility we built 10 years ago that we still haven't paid off. However you get into that trap, what ends up happening is you begin to talk about money not as a pastor but an administrator. And actually a key theme that runs through the book is what can you do to make sure that every time you talk to your congregation about money, they know deep down that you're saying those words because you love them, not because you love their money. So I think that's a significant trap that I see often. And it's just our job as pastors is to make sure that that administration fuels ministry, not the other way around. You know, we build our buildings and they're such and such a size, which means that we have to have a particular type of minister to fit the building. It's precisely, you know, backwards. I think another trap that people get into is they use the budget to pacify different factions in the congregation. You know, you've talked about the importance of mission and money, and much of the job of the elders of the pastors of a church is to make sure that the money is supporting the mission. And as we begin to think about the budget kind of as a free-for-all to, you know, get everybody a little piece of the action, it's very difficult to have money support the mission of the church. And we end up, for all practical purposes, having institutionalized disunity into the congregation.
Hey, Jamie, let's pause just for a moment for a word of update from Midwestern Seminary.
Midwestern Seminary's 81-hour Master of Divinity degree prepares you for ministry today and tomorrow. Midwestern Seminary's flagship degree program is our primary track for ministry preparation. Requiring only 81 credit hours, the MDiv program is an efficient option for students, equipping them to serve the church in pastoral ministry. Residential students will be trained in a unique community environment passionately focused on the local church. Online students can earn the full degree without leaving their current ministry context. Come be a part of one of the fastest growing seminaries in North America, as we develop a new culture of discipleship devoted to the local church and committed to taking God's unchanging word into a rapidly changing world. Visit mbts.edu/mdiv today.
All right, I'm back in the studio today talking with Jamie Dunlop. We're talking about his book, Budgeting for a Healthy Church. Very well placed. And boy, I have seen that time and time again in local churches where the budget itself is such a source of conflict and such a source of kind of pocket constituency appeasement, and you must stay away from that. Now, in your book, you talk about the pastor and the pastor's responsibility in leading in the church budget process. I think many pastors see this again as something foreign to them, something that's difficult. Perhaps, you know, they're more men of the text, and numbers for them don't come easy. Give us a word of encouragement to pastors listening why they should care about the budget and actually engage that process.
Yeah, it's a great question. I would encourage pastors saying, you need to lead this process. You need to lead this process because as administratively complex as a budget may be, it's much more spiritually complex. The question of do we invest more in missions or more in the building? We're grappling with spiritual priorities here. That's that's not an administrative question. Should we continue funding this missionary, or is it time to ask him to come home? That's a very pastoral question. Your budget is littered with those things. And the leaders of the church who are the spiritual under-shepherds of Christ, those who meet those basic qualifications in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1, are the leaders God has given to do this kind of work. But the second piece of encouragement I would have is you don't have to do this alone. You don't have to be the one putting together the financial model that preachers are giving next year. You don't have to be the one running that spreadsheet. Deacons are wonderfully positioned to help you. Administrative-minded staff can be of great help. One thing I do in the book, in the section on leadership, is I lay out 7 tasks that pastors need to be involved in. They need to be the ones to ultimately set the budget income estimate, to determine if the high-level allocations of the budget are correct, to provide some degree of quality control for every budget line, to balance long-term plans with emerging opportunities, to assess which opportunities for ministry are honestly especially unique to your church, to communicate the budget, because there's so much good teaching you can do as you talk about the budget, and then to determine when and how to break the budget. And in a small church, it may be that the pastors can be very deeply involved in that. In a large church, you may have a lot of help in doing that. But a pastor, and I would say pastors, if you have multiple pastors in your church, need to be involved in each of those 7 to whatever level of detail is necessary to make sure that they are leading the process in those activities.
So as it relates to the budget specifically, what would you say that church budget should encompass or what it should include?
I would think it should include funding the activities that you feel are part of pursuing the Great Commission, making disciples and teaching them to obey everything that Christ has commanded us. And that's more controversial in some churches than we might think at first, because there are some churches that have a budget that's going to fund the very basic elements of ministry, the building and the staff. But for anything that we deem more exciting, you know, ministry outside the church, we'll run that through designated funds outside the budget because we think we can get more money, say, for missions if we do it that way. And I would encourage a church to just say, if this is part of our calling as a church, it should be in our budget so we can make this decision together as a congregation. And, you know, as I look in the New Testament after Pentecost, pretty much every description of giving is done together as a church. You know, Barnabas lays money at the apostles' feet. You know, it's the churches at Antioch and Philippi that are funding Paul's ministry. Paul asked the church in Corinth to gather together the money before he takes it to the starving Christians in Judea. And I think it's an important discipline as Christians to recognize my giving should be primarily not just to the church, but through the church. And that means that the church budget should really encompass what this church is doing.
And so conversely, is there any category of expenditures or any particular things or items you see often showing up in churches' budgets that you would say, you know what, principally, I don't know that the church should be funding that?
Well, you mentioned buildings. Buildings are wonderfully helpful. I cannot imagine our ministry would be anything like what it is, except that a bunch of Christians in 1911 sacrificially built a building for us, which can, you know, house a sizable congregation here in the middle of the city. But buildings are also an idol, and we can certainly spend money on buildings in ways we shouldn't. There are many programs churches fund that I think really just cause disunity and consumerism because they're designed to meet needs of people as consumers rather than calling them to be providers, or they're dividing the congregation rather than uniting the congregation. That may not be sinful, but are working against the type of ministry we're trying to have as a church. Churches fund staff positions more as benevolence and less as stewards. That's a common problem that churches face, where they're funding things that should not be in the budget. And then, of course, you have things that are just evil and wrong that, sadly, many churches in this country fund today. where they've departed from Scripture and they're finding things that are antithetical to Scripture. And maybe one last category, again, going back to more faithful churches, is churches who are funding missions work without really understanding it well enough. And as they will discover someday in glory that they've either been funding things that weren't as biblically sound as they thought, or they were funding work that just wasn't nearly as effective as they thought. It's a great stewardship a church has to make sure that its missions dollars are being spent wisely.
You know, that last sentence, I want to emphasize that very point again. It is a great stewardship a church has to make sure its missions dollars are being spent wisely. And many churches, again, they hire out of almost a sense of benevolence, or they keep people on the ministry staff out of a sense of benevolence. And, you know, you think the church is an employment agency where you just can't let someone go. You can't transition someone out of a ministry position, even though they are ineffective, or perhaps even they demonstrate very little of a sense of calling to ministry, period. You know, our time is flying by here. I want to come back, Jamie, I guess to one final question for you, and that is this. Speak to pastors who really could and should use the budget as a pastoral tool. And I know you touched on this in your book, as I recall, chapter 8. But speak to that point. Give us a final word here of exhortation.
Yeah, I'd encourage you to use the budget as a pastoral tool in two ways. Number one, use it to pray for your church. It is a magnificent collection of the things your church is dreaming about, is wanting to do for the Lord. A great thing to pray about as an individual. Use it to pray about it, to pray about things together as a church. And secondly, use it as a tool to teach. There really is no time when the budget's coming up in the life of your church when it's not a wonderful opportunity to teach. When you're behind, teach the congregation about your trust in God's perfect provision, that He is providing what is absolutely best, and your job is simply to be faithful. When you're ahead, talk about the importance of stewardship. You know, we've been entrusted with more money. Now, you know, that means we have a greater stewardship. We need to make sure we invest that money wisely. You can talk about giving. And why people should give when you bring about the budget. So I would say make sure you use the budget to pray and make sure you use the budget to teach. And do not underestimate the potency of those two tools.
Jamie, we'll leave it at that. Thank you for being with me on Preaching and Preachers. Your book, out with Zondervan, Budgeting for a Healthy Church, Aligning Finances with Biblical Priorities for Ministry. Jamie, thank you for being with me today on Preaching and Preachers.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.